Welcome to episode 27 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is April 1st, 2012. I am Matthew Furlough, and this is my repatriated brother, James Furlough. I'm not really sure if that's a word, but I like it.
I'll let it go this time.
So, you're back stateside, right in time for April Fool's Day.
Actually, no, I'm still down in Mexico. I haven't made it back yet.
Weird.
Just kidding, April Fools. I'm back.
Okay. New rule, James. If we're going to do anything on for April Fools, it can't be really lame, okay?
April Fools.
Gotcha. All right, well, this week, like every week, we'll be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera, the soap opera that is corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and the technology they are developing. Before we get into the meat of the show, James has got a short disclosure that we got to race through.
I guess I still work for HP.
Woohoo!
Though I did notice that you didn't talk about HP at all last week in your podcast, and I was slightly disappointed about that. But
I noticed, yeah.
I still work for HP. I don't currently know which division I work in. I guess I now work for the Postscript part of HP, the PPS division.
Yes, which is the
so
printer's
I'm the
personal
afterthought. That's how I like to think about it.
Perfect. Hey, as long as they're still willing to pay you and you have something to do.
Oh, so the important part is I do still work for them. So I should always say I when speaking about my opinion, and I should never say like we think when talking about HP. And if I do, I meant to say I.
Yeah. You know, if you notice, I feel like we missed a lot of we talked about a lot of cool stuff last week. So what were your thoughts on last week really quick? You know, since you act like a normal audience member?
I thought it was good. No, I really liked it. The only place where I think I had some major disagreement, which I think, like, or not disagreement necessarily, but, like, and I think you could have seen this coming, was the whole, what's Microsoft going to do with their ARM-only based thing in iTunes? And, you know, is that a big deal or not? And I honestly don't think it's a big deal.
Really?
I do not think that Microsoft thinks that an ARM-based only tablet is going to be your main computing device. Ah. I think they see it like, you know, where you're going to load it from a desktop computer that has iTunes on it because it's running the x86 processor, and then you're going to load it into whatever their special player is, and that's how.
Yeah, but okay. So I guess that's sort of the route Google has gone. Okay.
Which was my other thing. I would have brought that up too. Like, how are they handling it? And one could argue not very well. Is that what's it? And is that literally what's stopping the Android devices from taking off?
Now that, since they're outselling Apple devices, you know, 4-to-1 or whatever the crazy. I guess they. You know what? That actually will bring us to an article maybe later.
But other than that, anyways. I thought the the security information, like, that's super interesting. You know, that's pretty cool. I'd love to sit over his shoulder and like watch some of those packets fly in a Starbucks.
Oh my gosh, it's crazy. It's
pretty cool.
It's horrifying. He said, yeah, we've had talks outside of the podcast about that, and he said, you know, you really get this sense of, you know, at first it's really cool, and then you start to realize what you're looking at, and you're looking at people's personal private interactions on the internet. It starts to, you know, especially as you get into some of the really more personal private stuff, and you start to go, ooh, this is really not meant for my eye. So yeah, but I've seen it, and it's a little matrixy, I'll be totally honest. You feel like you're looking at, you know, streams of code. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So, good. I'm glad you liked it. I've heard a couple people say that they enjoyed last week's show. So, again, thanks to Keegan Black for filling in and doing that with us.
Yeah, we'll have to make sure to get him on with the two of us so we can grill him from both sides.
Yeah.
That'll be cool. Actually, I like the idea of having a guest on the show just in general because it brings a different perspective. I think you know, when we definitely have biases and trains of thoughts and ways that we see in the world, and it's nice to bring someone in who, you know, looks at it differently.
Yeah.
So that was cool. That was cool. I was in Mexico, as you know, which is why I wasn't on a podcast. It was an awesome trip. Really enjoyed it. But now I'm back, and I read way too much news on the drive up. I had less news articles than I thought I would have queued up in my RSS reader. I only had 1,300 articles. That was
it. Yeah.
I was sure I would have over 2,000, but I made sure that, like, I was all caught up the Sunday morning, last Sunday morning. So I only had a week's. That was a week's worth of news.
Nice. I powered through it. Just so everybody knows, yeah, we don't like cherry pick like out of 50 articles. We both of us have readers that are filled with at least 1,300 articles a week. that we peruse for just the gold nuggets to bring to our listening audience. So
yeah,
that's pretty fun. Speaking of, so this is actually this first article. I thought it was pretty fascinating, and I wanted to bring it up, but it was from last Sunday, so I figure we'll kick off this one.
That's fine.
It was one of those ones where Keegan and I got pretty lost. You know, we lost track of time, and I think the only reason we were able to keep it under 2 hours is because at some point I glanced at my clock and realized, you know, how far in we were. but we just cut this one out. Anyways, this TechCrunch basically announcing that studies have been done, reports have been written, and the consensus is more movies will be streamed than watched on disc in 2012. Hmm. Dun, dun, dun.
You know, that's really interesting because I actually got into a discussion with someone while driving up from Mexico. And ridiculously, it's 2.5 days of driving. And I'm talking like 10-hour plus days of driving, like that counts as a day. So I got and I haven't taken a shower yet, so that's my commitment to this podcast, just saying.
I'm like, makes me glad I'm not sitting next to you.
4 days, sans soapy water.
Oh, it's terrible.
Yeah, I think I'm – nah, that'd be TMI. Anyways, the conversation we had – I am seriously contemplating dropping Netflix altogether.
Really?
Because their streaming is, they're just like television shows. And I find myself literally going, I'm bored, I'm just going to stream something. As opposed to it being like a purposeful, this is the movie I want to see. And this is the crazy part. I actually have a movie like wish list that I want to watch, and none of them are available streaming on Netflix. And so it's like, well, what's the point of this? And I've considered going back to the disc. And then I thought, you know what? Why don't I just save the, I don't know how much, what is it now? It's like $7 or $8, something like that. Why don't I save that money and then actually rent a movie on iTunes or Amazon, whatever, when I want to watch a movie? And, you know, and I could do that once or twice a month, and I would still break even. And I'd actually get to see what I want to see. And, you know, if I wanted to just, like, you know, zone out, I could do Hulu for free, like I currently do right now.
So my point,
which I guess, still says streaming, but
we're gonna say
going back to the discs. I did contemplate that.
You really interesting, yeah. Because that's I was gonna say, that's one of the things that this article points out, is that, you know, Netflix isn't your only option between and Amazon's actually the other big one that they say is really gonna take up and move in the direction of. Kind of where people are going to go for movies, but it's Netflix, Amazon, Hulu, Apple, and a number of other smaller video places. But what I think is fascinating about this is that there's always, I remember getting into an internet argument.
An internet argument.
the best. Back in the days of Dig, and it was when the MacBook Air had been released without a DVD player. People were complaining at the time about the fact that the MacBook Pros didn't come with a Blu-ray disc player, and I made the comment that, you know, Apple's obviously moving in the direction of everything is you're connect, you do all your stuff from a server. They don't want you to go with Blu-ray, not because it's some sort of a, you know, a cynical attempt to, you know, to take on Sony. It's because they really think that the disc is dead. And obviously Apple has moved even further down that road. And the argument that somebody said, that somebody made, and I felt a little bit compelled by it, was that, you know, never, their statement was, never doubt the bandwidth of a van barreling down the road at 90 miles per hour filled with Blu-rays. And their analogy was, in the point of what they were saying was, yes, internet's getting faster, but really and truly, mass movement of DVDs and hard drives and stuff like jump drives is still going to be able to move more information faster and more, you know, more and more efficiently than the internet. And I thought about that for a while, and then I realized, yeah, but the problem is that you still have to get it from that truck to your house somehow. You still have to load it onto your computer. And I think that, you know, when all is said and done, you know, even with the fact that we don't all have super high bandwidth broadband, I think we're really, you know, we're getting to the point where physical, you know, moving data on physical storage devices is really becoming, you know, a thing of the past. And I think this is just another nail in the coffin of physical, you know, physical media being a physical medium transferring data. You know, we're moving down that road, but
right.
It's interesting that it's happening. And I remember back when the Blu-ray was announced, and everybody was talking about the next wave of disc, and they were talking about holographic, you know, 3D holographic, 17 layer discs, and that they'd be able to store data, you know, crazy amounts of data on these discs. They'd be rewritable, and everybody was just, you know, hooping and hollering about the future of, you know, disc mediums. And I remember thinking at the time, you know, I have a feeling that the Blu-ray is really the last iteration. I think we're done. You have all these cool technologies, and they might find their way into some niche market, but the idea of a mass market device like a VHS or a tape deck or a CD or a Blu-ray, I think is over. And I think that this is really a testament to the fact that we are right on the cusp of, in the next 10 years, of nobody's going to.
Well, and part of that is no one's producing holographic content. So why do I need to create a disc to transfer it?
No. It was you would store the data holographically. And so you could. So instead of having one layer.
What does that mean?
It was crazy, but basically, depending on how, you know, if you know how, like, the basic principle of a CD is similar to a record player, where you shine a laser, and if the laser light reflects back, it's a 1. If it doesn't, it's a 0. And a Blu-ray, all it does is it's a very small beam, so the data can get really compressed. Well, the idea with the holographic one was that you could shine light at different angles to the same point, and depending on where you shined it and where you were reading it, it would be either a 1 or a 0 or a 0 or a 1. And so you could start compressing multiple data bits into one location. And so, you know, one pass of the CD at one angle would give you one string of data, but another pass at a different angle would give you a completely different, and so you could really get high density data. I mean, it was a cool idea, and I think it has use somewhere. I just don't think you're gonna be watching movies on discs like that.
Got it. I would agree.
Not to mention, I can't accidentally scratch my hard drive when I pop it out of its container and move it into my DVD player.
Right. Totally. Yeah. But that's interesting. That's cool. I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah.
Maybe the movie industry will actually get on board, and I won't have to cancel Netflix and something. That's cool. So, speaking of, I got nothing. Twitter also launches. I was gonna say something like, speaking of business models, or something like that. Twitter might actually have one. Well, let me take that back. Twitter has a business model. It's just not very good. And they might have a way of actually improving it and making it better, which is via a self-serve advertising platform, which is exactly what Google and Facebook have, which is why both of those make not millions, but billions of dollars. They're like money machines. And they're opening up to small businesses. And I don't know why. I mean, small businesses, fine, great, whatever. But it's kind of like they're opening up to everybody eventually. What they're doing, I don't know if it has a special name. They're calling them promoted products, I guess. Basically, there are two types of things that you can promote. First thing is you can promote for a small fee, your Twitter account. So, for example, we could promote Furlough Bros,
Nice.
and it would analyze our current followers, and then for people who it goes, oh, this is a similar person. In the suggested follower section, it would like say, here's a promoted suggested follower that we think you'll like. And then you only pay if that person follows you.
Interesting. Is there any
The
talk on
other,
how much that costs?
it sounds like you kind of set your own like daily spend. I don't know.
Sort of like the Google text ads, where if you
Yeah,
say, I want to
I
spend $100
don't.
a day, and they'll have, they'll get you as many clicks as it takes to get there, and then they'll stop.
Yeah, and I don't know if there's some sort of automated bidding process where it's like, oh, this guy's got a ton of followers, or this guy could be targeted for a ton of promoted tweets. Oh, I'm sorry, man, promoted accounts. Therefore, it's going to cost more. I don't know how that works. I'm sure that's, people will find out over time. The other way is you can literally do promoted tweets, where basically it's the you tweet out your regular stuff, and then if you have a popular tweet, which is defined by things that are replied to or retweeted themselves, and you're like saying, hey, let's do, I want in on that product, Twitter will automatically promote that tweet again to followers who aren't following you but might still find it interesting because they have a similar follower mix as your current followers. Does
Interesting.
that make sense? And
Yeah.
so it'll insert it as a promoted tweet into that person's timeline. If they follow you, retweet, reply, or whatever, then you get charged. If they don't do anything, doesn't cost you anything.
I like the idea that they're going to use their data, their
Pandora-like,
Well, yeah.
they know, oh, these people are similar to this, and they're gonna start using it, which I think that's cool.
Right, and I think that that's, one of Facebook's major, products. And obviously Google Plus is going that direction too. If we want to take all your data, compile you into a person, understand you better based on what everybody else is doing, and we'll, in a way, cloud source who the people who are going to be most interested in your stuff are. And you're going to end up with a lot of people. Hopefully you'll end up with a lot of people who actually like what you like, following you. So that's cool. I like that.
Yeah,
Hopefully it'll be.
we might have to give it a try just for the fun of it and see how it works.
Yeah, definitely.
But
So,
yeah, I like it.
cool.
Cool,
Well,
cool.
so I have to be totally honest. I know I wasn't going to talk about this until the weekend, but these stupid cats are driving me nuts. I'm not sure if the cats on
What are you
AdBlock.
talking about?
Okay, so do you use AdBlock Plus?
I think so.
So probably a lot of people that use it. I use it on Google Chrome, and for April Fools, they changed he changed the
So
code.
if I go to Facebook, will it show?
Yes,
All right, I'm
cats
doing it right now.
everywhere. It's not. He's calling it Cat Block Plus for the weekend, and it's supposed to be an April Fool's thing. But I guess a lot of people really, really like it. But I'm on this article, and I got these cat eyes just staring at me. It's freaking me out. Do you see any cats?
No.
What?
I totally got distracted though by Oh, sorry. I was looking at a picture on Facebook and it was hilarious. I don't see any ads.
Don't see weird. Well, okay, suffice it to say that there are cats all over
Okay.
all of
Where
my
would there
web
be ads?
pages.
There would be like
Go,
Yahoo, right? They would
yeah,
have.
go to Mac Daily News. That one's a good one because they.
Do I use Adblock Plus? Here, let me see what I use.
Yeah, maybe you don't.
That's very possible.
Because you don't use Chrome, right? You use Safari.
No,
Safari.
I use both. I use both.
What are you on
All
right
right.
now?
Help. I'm on Chrome. Help me out here. I go to
It should be right up in there.
settings.
Yeah, you go
Any
down, go to the
bookmarks?
toolbar, and then you're gonna go down
What?
to.
Tools. There we go. Tools.
Yeah.
Extensions. Ad block plus beta.
Oh, you're using the beta. Maybe that's
I
why.
guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Maybe that's why you don't have cats. I'm using the most popular Chrome extension with over 4 million users, blocks ads all over the web.
Yeah,
Interesting.
mine.
Anyways, so
I don't know. So
back.
you got cats, I got nothing. But that's kind of
Yeah.
funny.
That is, yeah. So I'm gonna try to ignore these cats for a little while. I think I can actually. Oh, I can probably. Oh, there's a button, and they're all gone. Wow,
Magic.
nice. Now I can be non-distracted. Anyways, so U.S. Department of Commerce. I'm surprised it's not the FCC, but anyways, Department of Commerce. They are set, or they have set a path to make 95 megahertz of prime spectrum is what they're calling it,
All
available
right.
for wireless broadband use.
What does
That
that
is
mean?
pretty exciting.
It means it's exciting.
We've talked about this on the show before, the idea that broadband is a, or rather spectrum is a limited resource. There are only so many parts
Right.
of, you know, there's only so much that you can use, and the more and more it gets used, the more cluttered it gets. And I've mocked articles before that have you know said the world was ending because you know it's just one of those things where you either charge more for it or you get better technology that uses it better. You know, it's not, you know, we'll figure it out. So the U.S. Department of Commerce is trying to help get us as we move along, and they're opening up a bunch of a bunch of spectrum, a pretty good chunk of it. It looks like it's the 1755 to 1850 millihertz band. To accommodate commercial wireless broadband services. So hopefully what this will end up doing is allow new services to kind of get into the market, help out big guys like Verizon and AT&T, give them a little more space to accommodate, you know, the massive amount of data that's being transmitted wirelessly, and hopefully with any kind of luck, you know, we won't have crippling high fees for all of our internet that will literally make it pointless to even have wireless internet on your devices because either it's super expensive or you can never get service. That's what they're trying to avoid. And it's kind of a big deal. So I think you're going to see more and more of the spectrum repurposed to this sort of thing, and they'll just say, what we used to use it for, now you're gonna have to do it digitally through the internet, and you know, but they're trying to really use it as wisely as possible right now. So, pretty cool, pretty
That's
cool.
a good thing.
Yeah, definitely. So, just wanted to drop you on that all so you know about it.
Thanks.
You're welcome. So this next one's pretty. This one's another kind of big one that's exciting. See, it's exciting to me. They are making, get this,
Oh my
transparent,
gosh, that's amazing. Oh wait, sorry. I didn't time
flexible,
that right.
transparent, flexible 3D memory chips. And
Whoa.
they, yeah, and they think
So
it might be the
flexible,
next.
like as in like bendy flexy, or
Yeah.
as in they can change. Okay.
No, like literally, they're like, imagine them like a sheet of plastic that you can like, and move around and do all sorts of nutty
Okay.
stuff with.
So what's the big deal about that?
Okay, so this is kind of,
You like how I just served you up that softball?
appreciate that. What's the big deal? Number one, these things can like, they can go up to 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit. So they can get, super hot. So you can use them in
Sounds
like
hot.
ovens and stuff, and which is pretty cool. You can immediately start to think of some basic stuff like,
You said in ovens and stuff? Clearly, you have a different idea of an oven than I do when you say that, because my oven only goes up to 500.
Right. Well, I have a different idea of ovens.
Yeah.
I use a different kind of oven at work. But they'll work in kitchens too. You can get them really hot, which is a big deal because they're more robust. One of the big things that people are trying to figure out if there's any market for or where you will use it is obviously the flexible OLED screens. You can bend them in all sorts of crazy shapes. You can use them for all sorts of stuff. Now if you're but one of the big questions has always been, yeah, okay, my screen can flex, but the rest of the computer needs to go somewhere. So now if
Right.
you can just embed flexi chips, and they're making flexible silicone, they're making flexible memory chips, and they're making flexible processors, and pretty soon here everything might be flexible enough where you can literally have a screen that is embedded with layers of microprocessors and memory chips, and it's fully transparent, and all you need is some sort of an energy source to run the whole thing, and this is
Fuel
where I get,
cells.
yeah, well, I was going to say wireless energy, but
Oh.
whatever future technology you want. So that's cool. But one of the big deal, so one of the things that they talk about kind of briefly in this article that I was shocked that they talked about only briefly is that these memory chips only have two. Usually, when you have a your like solid state hard drives and stuff, there, each data bit has 3 points that you need to connect to in order to get the data out. You need to have a source. You need to have a ground, high, like a high voltage, and then an actual something that's reading at the point. And so that's pretty standard electrical stuff. It has to do with how the chip is constructed. But I guess one of the big deals with these is that it only requires two. And why that's such a big deal is because, what it means is that you'll be able to put these into, when you actually start printing off the chips and building them into denser cubes, you don't only have to go out in two dimensions. You can actually really easily fit them into even more compact 3D dimensions where you have data bits that are, you have little, each storage cell is there, they run along the X, they run on the Y, and in the Z dimension. And so this is pretty huge for creating really, really, really high density, small chips, and hopefully will really increase the amount of RAM that you have in your jump drives, your phones, and eventually even your computer. And they're, they're really, it sounds like they're really able to take a beating, whether through heat or just fluxing, and so all sorts of stuff. So they're, this is one of those things where, obviously it's still pretty early in their development, but they're having really good results with them so far. And I think in the next
So
couple of years.
who is they? Who's
Oh,
doing it right
jeez.
now?
Okay. This is the. Give me 1 second. It was the National Meeting and Exposition of the American Chemical Society, the world's largest scientific society. What's his? A scientist reported. Oh, this is fantastic. These new chips are really big for the electronic industry because they are looking for replacing flash memory, said James M. Tour, PhD, who led the research team. It doesn't say what university. Great reporting, guys. So James M. Tour, he's a professor at some university.
Sounds like there's some at Rice University doing some work too.
Is it? Okay. Yeah. Douglas Nate.
Okay. So it's still in the university research stages.
Yeah, but you know, it's okay.
All right. Cool.
Yeah. So very fun. Good times.
So I actually, real quickly, I just want to say, I think it is awesome that Microsoft, or how do I don't want to say it, currently OpenStreetMap is the new open source thing that is gaining huge attention because Apple recently started using it for their iOS and iPhoto, and Foursquare is using it for theirs. Mapping stuff, and the big reason why they're all switching is because Google Maps, which is, you know, the current 100-pound gorilla, because I think they have like 71% share of the market, actually charges those guys money to use their APIs because they use so much. But what I found out, or this article that that you linked to, that I was going to link to, I thought it was awesome that back in 2010. Way back in the day, Microsoft actually brought on one of the OSM like lead developers to work with Microsoft and for OSM, and has been slowly building that up. And that's what runs Bing Maps and all of their stuff. Yeah. And so it's like Microsoft is back to this open source technology, and we are just starting to see it actually start to take some chinks in Google's armor. I still think Google Maps is better, but this is interesting to see this little battle heat up.
We had discussed, well, the reason I linked it is because we had discussed the, you know, back when, you know, just a few weeks ago, Apple announced that iPhoto was going to be using OpenStreetMap data instead of Google Maps data. And we had kind of talked about how, yeah, this is a cool contender, but we felt like it needed, you know, there's no governing body. There's nothing kind of, you know, what's to say that it actually works out the way you want it to work out. And this is, I think, you know, we weren't the only one asking that question, because I think this article is a response, which is, yeah, Microsoft is taking a huge active role in beefing up this system, because they want people to use it and be comfortable with it. And if you start using the OpenStreetMap back end, it's going to be only a matter of time before you realize that, wow, this integrates really nicely with Bing Maps. And then all of a sudden, you know, and then all of a sudden of having, instead of having a Google Maps link on your web page or used on your device or in your app or whatever, you're going to be as likely to use Bing as anything. I think it's a smart move for Microsoft. I think it was the right thing to do. You know, and kind of an acknowledgement of the fact that they aren't the big guys in this arena, and it's a really great way to get a lot of people on your side, and using, you know, to slowly warm them up to the idea of switching away from Google.
It's just interesting because clearly mobile is the next, you know, that wave is currently going through. So it's fascinating to see that. You know, surprise, surprise, competition heats up in that area. And it's cool, and it's an interesting strategy. We'll see if open source actually wins.
Yeah. I have a hard time believing they won't do well at this point. They got some big, big players that are starting to bet the farm on open maps, so we'll see. Very cool. So speaking of devices that use OpenStreetMap, so I've been reading quite a few articles about this, and I thought that this was an interesting dilemma. And It's one that I don't know if Apple needs to address it or if the market will address it or what happens, but basically the new iPad has this super high density screen, and the big concern everybody always had about that was, power consumption. How much battery life is it gonna have? How are you gonna be able to power it for long enough for it to be useful? Are they gonna still get the 10-hour battery life? How do you refresh it? They get the refresh rates fast enough? How do you actually manufacture it at a high enough level so that it's, looks great and all this? And suddenly, now that it's actually out there, they're running into a new problem that I don't think anybody really, I don't think anybody outside of Apple probably really acknowledged was gonna be an issue, which is, let's say you downloaded the new Angry Birds Space for your iPad, which is a pretty fun game, BTW, or you downloaded a couple new movies and you don't want to, and they're all in super high definition because they're revving up to work well with the new Retina display. You can fill up your 16 gigabytes so fast it's not even funny. Because of all the artwork that's getting really, really, really high, it's taking up a lot of memory, and all your movies are taking up a ton of memory. They're finding that the 16 gigabyte iPad is just not working for people anymore. Even
Wow.
though it's the cheapest, it's just you don't have enough storage space for enough apps for enough movies. And I can attest to this. I have a 32 gigabyte iPod Touch, which I really like. I think it's awesome. And even at 32 gigabytes, I find that it's like I can only have one or two seasons of any given show on my iPod at a time, which sounds like a lot,
That is a ton.
but I can imagine at a 16 gigabyte. Well, and I guess my point is that, what it requires me is to, I actually have to, I can't just keep all of my shows on it. I think back to my 80 gigabyte iPod where I could just keep everything on that. I didn't have to think about
Okay.
managing it, what was on it when. Whereas, now I actually have to manage that, and I don't have to do it very often because it's a 32 gigabyte hard drive. But it's funny. I thought if I got an iPad, maybe I could get by with just the 16 gigabyte. And I think it's like, clearly that's not possible. If for no other reason than your apps aren't going to let you do that. They're too big. And it's really kind of, it'll be interesting, I think, to see over the next year, 2 years, if Apple moves away from offering 16 gigabyte hard drive iPads because of that. I wouldn't be surprised if this is the last generation where you'll be able to get that small of a hard drive. And after that, you probably, I could see them move to actually to going to like a 32, 64 and a 90 or something like that. Now, usually they double it, but they may not. There's no reason why they can't put a 16 to 30 together in the same shell and maybe just have and maybe cost a little bit less, but still give you the for to manufacture, but will give you more space. But pretty interesting little dilemma they're having. Consumers are having. I
Makes
guess
sense.
cons biggest problem is that consumers aren't happy about it. And that to me is why Apple's gonna they're gonna react and have to make a change because, you think, well, you're selling me this device that's supposed to just work, and it doesn't just work. Oh. Fascinating.
I've never been a fan of the, I mean, I knew I wasn't going to get the 16 gig phone just because I knew it wasn't going to fit everything I wanted. So I'm not surprised to see the same issue with an iPad.
Yeah.
But
I think it's an even bigger issue because the screen's even higher resolution,
yeah.
dramatically. So.
We'll see. So this is interesting.
Okay.
The Verge has a story, and I can't remember if we talked about it or not, but it's coming. Let's see here. I don't know if I can pronounce his name. It's Marek Urban, who is a PhD at some random university. Yep, doesn't say. He was at the 243rd National Meeting and Exposition of the American Chemical Society, and he was talking about self-repairing plastics, which is pretty cool. So the idea is like your plastics that create bridges to each other, and when it gets damaged, they rejiggered it to like to turn red so you can see the damage. And then when you either like put it in front of like UV rays or some pH thingy or a certain temperature, they will actually like rebend and re-come together and change away from red and actually self-heal itself.
Yeah, it's I've heard about this technology before because it's pretty cool. It's like I guess
Nissan actually, it says here, Nissan actually has one.
right.
It's an iPhone case.
Yeah, which everybody was like, "What?" But they had this cool technology they wanted to show off in a way that people could use.
Yeah, so oh, University of Tokyo. At least that's where the research for Nissan's case came from. Which is a little bit different than Urban's team. But yeah. I thought that was cool. Self-healing plastic.
Yeah, the way I've heard the actual chemistry described is you got to think of it, it's like you got your plastic and it's got a bunch of little bubbles in it that when the bubbles get the right pH or heat or whatever activates them, they basically expand. And when they expand, they force the gaps closed. And it's sort of like, it's not exactly like a scar where it pulls everything together and reforms it. It basically just closes the gap. But it gives it. But it sounds like they're getting even more sophisticated with their turning to different colors and having that all change and stuff. So that's pretty cool. They're getting plastic is. They're gonna be able to do some crazy stuff with it. I think people will enjoy the results
Agreed.
that. I tried to come up with some sort of a sentence that didn't sound so lame, but
It did.
yeah. Well, if trends keep going the way they're going, it sounds like you won't be getting your self-healing plastic on your Android phone because Android won't be selling phones anymore. Dun dun dun. Okay, so that might be a little overblown,
April Fools.
but I've read a couple of articles this week that kind of spoke to issues that are going on with Android and Android specifically losing momentum. For a long time, Android, Google was outselling Apple at just an incredible rates. I mean, they were where any of any on even on any given month, Android was selling like twice as many phones as Apple was, which is huge, and that resulted in a much much bigger market share for Android than Apple. And clearly, things that kept seeming like they were going in that direction, and then this last things started to change. But in this last quarter, some big changes happened. And yeah, because it says in between June and August of 2011, so right around when we were starting this show, right before the iPhone 4S was debuted, 28% of phones were being that were 100. If you were to just look at iOS compared to Android, 28% of devices were. How in the world does this number even make sense? They have this bar graph. I've seen this bar graph other places, and I know what they're doing, and they're doing, but they. They have it marked from 0 to 100%, and then the numbers It's 28% of phones were iOS and 56% of phones being sold were Android, which I'm pretty sure only equals like 80%. But this is actually a Nielsen report is what they're having. And so it's actually 100% of all smartphones sold. So that includes your RIM and Nokia, Microsoft phones. Actually, one of the big things that people got upset was that Nielsen didn't even include Microsoft in their in their numbers because it was so small. They thought it didn't count, which is not good news for Microsoft right now. But one of the big things that did come out about it was that, like I said, in June of August, there was a 28 to 56% ratio between iOS and Android, so about 2 to 1. And then from December to February of this year, the ratio is now 43% iOS, 48% Android, which is getting a lot closer to parity. So there's a 1-for-1 device sales. And what's interesting about this is that they're, you know, Android is selling more phones, sold more phones in this last quarter than they did in the June and August quarter, because the smartphone market is just expanding at rates that are crazy. And so the question is, you know, even though they're still growing, the question you have to always ask yourself is, are they growing as much as everybody else? And the obvious answer is no, they're not. They're actually growing slower than the other ones, and they're going in they're trending in the wrong direction. So now everybody's freaking out and trying to ask the question of why is that? It's obviously not the Windows Phone, because the Windows Phone has made almost no dent in the market. Those two companies have basically pushed RIM out of the game, and Symbian has never really stood a chance. So basically, it's a, you know, consumers are moving in the direction of buying iOS devices instead of Android. And, you know, I don't know about you, talking with people and stuff, but I've had quite a few friends that I thought were really, really hardcore Android fans. And I guess we've had a couple articles the past few months where people have been really critical of the Android platform. And it's like, I don't know. It's like in the last 6 months, people have just kind of gotten fed up with the fact that Android didn't live up to what they wanted it to be. And I think you're starting to see that show up in the numbers, where people are starting to move towards back towards Apple. You know, and now that Apple has a device that you can buy that's free with, you know, a 2-year contract, or $100, or $200, or $300. You know, I have the full range of devices now. There's not really a price reason why you have to stay with Android. There's no, you know, unless you're on T-Mobile, there's no reason why you can't get an Apple phone. So pretty fascinating watching that movement. I think I gotta believe that the fact that, you know, the Apple or the iPhone is on Verizon has as much to do with this as anything. You know, you're starting to see the numbers kind of work out for Verizon jumping on the iPhone bandwagon. I know. Pretty fascinating watching these numbers.
I have absolutely no idea why.
Yeah, it's tough. It all feels like guesses to me. You know, I think this is one of those Freakonomic moments where, you know, I don't think there's a silver bullet. I think it's just a little bit of everything. It's the really hardcore fans aren't satisfied with it. You can buy it on Verizon. There's fragmentation problems. The app developers are frustrated with it. They're not making as much money on Android as they want, and so there's more development time being spent on iOS. You know, it feels like there's a whole slew that can account for different reasons why this is happening. Obviously, it's not the end of the world at all. They're still actually selling more Android phones than iOS phones, and, you know, together they're accounting for you know, over 90% of the market of what was being sold. So it's not like they're in a bad position. It's just an interesting trend to watch, and especially if it continues, you know, Android's really going to have to, or Google's really going to have to do something to shake up the market. But we'll keep an eye on it as it goes on. No reason to sell your stock in Google, that's for sure. They're selling so many of those devices, it's not even funny. But
it is. It'd be nice if they made a little bit more than just $550 million from it. But
yeah, you're reading that other article that I added.
Yeah, yet. Well, actually, the craziest part about that article was not the $550 million.
It's I know.
That they've literally made $2 billion on Apple.
Yeah, they totally buried the lead on that article. I thought I was one of the things I was going to mention. I was like, well, but you guys have like, you know, Android has only made $550 million. And I, you know, you sit there and go, wow, that's interesting enough. And then you open it up and you realize they made so much money on iOS. It's not even funny. That's the way to be. You know, Microsoft, that's the position Microsoft always wanted was, we don't really care who's selling what, we're going to make money off of it. And that is definitely...
Yeah, all that says is Google's still doing good.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to know how much of that money is from their Maps licensing.
Yeah.
Could be potentially going away. But
I got to believe it's not a huge percentage. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if it were $200 million, you know, 10%. But I would be shocked if it were more than that. Still a ton of money, but still, you know, it's not like I think, you know, the core business of Google Search, I think is still what they're making tons of money business. Off of. Yeah, and yeah. They, you know, and obviously, you know, obviously Siri hasn't cut into their, as everybody feared, Siri hasn't cut into their market yet. So, fascinating. One of the things that Google is definitely they're making a big move though with iPad. We've been kind of talking or against the iPad. We've been kind of discussing the idea of how is when's Google going to really step up to the plate and try to show everybody what an Android tablet is capable of, you know, this announcement of the fact that they're going to be making a special Nexus tablet and whatnot. It's pretty exciting. But one of the things that I guess they've decided to make a move.
Do you really think it's going to be a sub $200 tablet?
Nexus?
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
Why would they do that?
I don't know. That's what the rumor mill says.
Jeez, I think they would be a fool to give up complete. I mean, because basically what they would be admitting if it was a sub $200 device is that Apple wins the $500 and above device. I really, believe it or not, I don't think that that's necessarily true, and I think there's still room up there, and that's where the best profit margins are. I think
not
if they make
devices that are not horrible,
right? Yeah, you know, that's the biggest thing is that it's like you know, the Nexus, the whole idea of the Nexus was always this kind of, this is the crowning achievement of what we can accomplish when we put Google engineers doing the hardware and the software with tight integration, and for them to try to go toe-to-toe with Amazon, because I think clearly that's what they're doing, you know, it's like, especially since, yeah, I understand the fact that Amazon's competing with you as a online retailer and whatnot, but I don't think that's the war they should be fighting at all. I think I think they'll be making a mistake if they do that. Not to mention, I would be rather disappointed with the device because, you know, I clearly am excited about the more high-end ones. And I think Microsoft, that's where Microsoft's going to be shooting with their Windows 8. You know,
true.
Which Microsoft's not always right in what market they shoot for, but they're pretty smart guys. They've got some good marketers. I think they clearly believe that there's still space to go toe to toe with Apple, and that battle's not done yet. And I think it's time for everybody to show up with their A game. And the best part about that is that whatever those guys do that works, Apple will respond and they'll make an even better iPad. So I think they should do that. But one of the things that Google is going to do, and this is pretty cool, is that they tried to do that whole online storefront for Android phones that just completely fell apart because Verizon and AT&T weren't big fans of it. And so when they kind of sold their soul to the telecoms in order to actually have their devices succeed, which obviously it was a good business decision, but one of the consequences of that was that the storefront just collapsed. Well, since tablets are a different game and they don't require necessarily a 2-year contract, it looks like Google is going to be revving up to try that again and really try to allow people to find out what devices they want. I'm kind of excited about this idea, but what they're going to do is they're going to reopen their Google Android storefront, and it's going to focus entirely on tablets. And with the expressed idea of we're try, there's a real muddied field of what's the best device, what should I get, how am I going to compete with. If you want an Android device instead of an iOS device, it can be hard just to kind of weigh your way through what your options are. And so they're going to try to make life easy on you, which I think is really smart. That's going to really help them out long term. And it's something that Android or it's something that Amazon's doing, where you can figure out what Kindle you want online on their website, and I think that helps Amazon a lot as well. And if it's true that they think Amazon is their big competitor, then, which I still think seems crazy to me, I think that's just an obvious route to go. So that'd be cool to see.
So I'm gonna, I don't want to say this. I've been driving for, I was on the road for like 14 hours today,
Yes.
which was preceded by being on the road for closer to 16 hours, which was preceded by being on the road for like another 10 hours.
Okay.
I'm slightly delirious right now. But here's what I actually see happening. The beginning of next year. I honestly, this is what I think. I think it's going to be a two-horse race, and it's going to be between Apple and Microsoft. And I am willing to bet that Microsoft sells more tablets than Apple does, even though Apple pulls in more revenue. I think Google's going to do all of this. Good for them. Enjoy it. Have fun. You're the Linux. You don't even know it. Amazon, I don't even know what to think about them, honestly.
Well, they're like Sony. I mean, if you go back to the iPod Touch, if you go back to the MP3 player
I
wars,
just.
they're like Sony. Yeah, they have a decent product. People will buy it, but I don't think people are going to go
Their
crazy.
timing was good to the market, so they actually made some sales, but I don't think they have any long-term staying power.
Yeah, I don't think they bring anything to the table that somebody else can't. Yeah, and I agree with you. I think Microsoft is gonna. They realize. I think one of the big things they realize is the whole idea that Android, especially in the Android tablet market, you watch commercials and you can't tell whether it's an Android tablet or an iPad, and people just assume it's an iPad. That's the worst. Oh man, from a marketing perspective, that's horrible. And I think Microsoft will be able to differentiate themselves. They're better at that sort of branding, allowing you to know this is a Windows slate
Well,
device.
and they're gonna put them in the Microsoft Store. They're gonna put them in Walmart, in Target, in Staples, in Best Buy, in Costco. You know, they're going to put them everywhere, and they're going to let you touch them and play with them, and they're going to give two-for-ones, and they're going to give them away with a printer, and I mean they're going to do what they do with the PCs, and they're going to let all the other manufacturers go crazy, go nuts with them. And that's, I don't know, I think that's what they're going to do, and they're just going to flood the market, and they're going to, we don't care.
Right. And it's crazy to think that 2 years ago we were saying that Microsoft was stupid for how late they were getting into the game, but I think it's more of a testament to Google's inability to get their game together with the tablets, and less about, you know, the potential that Microsoft has. I think this could have been Google's, and I think we're going to look back 5-10 years from now and go, I can't believe Google dropped the ball in this one as bad as they did.
Well, I just wonder in retrospect. I mean, they clearly just didn't have the skills to do a tablet. For whatever reason, the phone worked. They were able to pull that off, but the tablet's a different beast, even if the operating system is the same or very similar. For whatever reason, it truly is a different product.
Well, you know, I think...
It's closer to a computer, I guess.
Well, I sometimes I feel like you don't give Android credit, or you don't give Verizon credit enough for the success of Android. You know, people who wanted a great smartphone and couldn't get the iPhone tried out an Android and said, yeah, okay, it's not an iPhone, but it's still pretty dang good, and it's got some things that the Apple phones don't. So I actually think it's even better. You know,
and they gave them away. Remember those 2-for-1 deals? Man, they ran that forever.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and so it just, you know, they flooded the market, and people got to use them and realized that they were as good, if not better, than the iPhone in many areas. And, obviously I'm a pretty big iPhone fan. You know, we try not to hide our true movements, but I always think that it's, you know, I think I've always said it. I think it's the last 5-10% that makes all the difference. But they're, you know, the Android's pretty close, and it's things like the marketplace that aren't as good that I think really make a difference. Long term, man, that's just I agree. I don't think it may be next year, just because October they're finally gonna release it, and I think
all right, that's fair.
You know, I think it might take a year, but I think definitely by 2000 or 2014, 2012.
Yeah.
You're saying 2013. Yeah, I think by the end of 2013, 2014, I think that it'll be clear that the Android tablet has just fallen off the face of the earth, and there's two horses in the race, and it's Apple and Microsoft, and I wouldn't be surprised if Apple was selling more than Microsoft or vice versa, really and truly. I actually think that one's up in the air. I think almost assuredly Apple's going to be making more money than Microsoft.
Well, what's going to happen is I'm sorry.
Do you want to take a break and get some water or something?
No, it'll pass. I'm still semi-fighting my sickness from 2 weeks ago.
Oh, wow.
And so it's I go on these coughing sprees, and water doesn't help for whatever reason. It's not that kind of cough. So anyways, what's going to make it hard is that Microsoft's going to say, we've sold these many, you know, Windows 8. And it's going to include desktops and everything, and they're not going to break them out. And they're just going to be ridiculously high numbers, because they always are. But anyways, that was a total side topic.
Right. And one of the other things I wanted to bring up in regards to this is the fact that, you know, this started with the discussion of Google's going to be selling stuff selling their tablets online. Best Buy's announced that they're closing 50 stores this last Thursday. We've been talking a lot this today about the idea of people buying stuff on Amazon, buying stuff on, you know, whether it's, you know, if you walk into a Best Buy, they have a huge music section, they have a huge movie section, they have a huge video game section, they have a big computer section, a TV section, and then your general appliances. So, I'm sure they make a lot of money on appliances, but you can get appliances anywhere, including
Right.
Fry's and Sears. Big TVs as well, you can go get big TVs almost anywhere, including Costco and Walmart. You don't have to get them at Best Buy's. I think the vast majority of people are moving to buying their movies and CDs through digital retail, whether that's Amazon or Netflix or Apple or whatever. Music, it's probably Apple, but for your rest of your movies, I think that entire section of their store is just collapsing out from underneath them. And now it's like hardware is, most people want their customized device. I want my computer to have this, this, and this. I want to maximize that, minimize this for cost reasons. I can buy my tablets online, I can buy this online, I can buy that online, and I think what you're seeing is just slowly the internet is eroding each of Best Buy's areas of sales. It looked like it was just when Circuit City fell, I think people felt like that wasn't, obviously it was a sign of the times, but I feel like people felt, well, okay, now the real, there's only really one dedicated computer hardware kind of cool store to go to, and that's Best Buy. And so I think Best Buy saw that as a real victory. I think most people saw that as a real victory for Best Buy. And, and what is it? What are we now? 3, 4 years later, and it's obvious that no, that wasn't Best Buy beating Circuit City. That
Right.
was Best Buy being a few steps ahead of Circuit City and racing away from the tidal wave of destruction that is the internet. And so the real question to me is, not when does Best Buy go under, because I think that, they'll probably hang around forever or for a while, slowly closing stores and getting down to just the ones that make them the most money. But it's like the real question is, who's next? Who is most vulnerable to succumbing to internet retailers? Is it Walmart? Is it Target? Is it Fry's? Or is it Costco? And obviously each of them have their different. Have different stuff. I think
Right.
Best Buy's and Circuit City were particularly vulnerable to this just because they sold technology that is kind of internet centric. It's computer centric. To me, the real interesting question is, especially as Amazon tries to expand all the different things that they sell, they're really trying to move into not just the territory that was covered by Best Buy and Circuit City, but into the other retailers like Target and Walmart and Costco, and they want to take on the other big brick and mortar stores. I think you'll see more and more of that, so that'll be an interesting battle to watch as the
Well, and I
internet
mean, and
expands.
there's a ton more to it. I've never been super impressed with Best Buy. They just seem like a, how do I want to say it? Like, I feel like their supply chain is not excellent, whereas like Walmart, it is.
Right.
The reason why they get their prices as cheap as they do is because they have an amazing supply chain. And I've never felt that way about Best Buy. They've never had the need to be excellent at that for whatever reason. And I think part of it's just company culture, which is partly why they're also struggling and why places like Amazon are able to do well. And like you said, they sell a lot of tech stuff, and people who buy tech stuff feel comfortable buying online.
Yeah, I know. So, oh, I think it's funny. My reaction to those comments you make are twofold. Number one, I think they're absolutely true. And number two, I feel like that's what we were saying similar. We were making similar excuses about Circuit City when Circuit City collapsed. And I think the next big brick and mortar retailer that falls, I think we'll be making this. Well, you know, they had this issue and that issue, and maybe the fact that Walmart does have an excellent supply chain means that they'll be able to make it longer than anybody else, or maybe even, you know, stay around despite the online retailers. But I think that.
Well, and you got to remember too that, like, I forget which place Walmart's in, but Walmart.com is one of the largest search engines in the world.
Right. I mean,
they do a ton of sales online, so they're not just a brick and mortar store.
Right. So, oh, interesting. Fascinating.
Yeah, definitely. So, something else that's fascinating, after all this bashing on Google Maps, it feels kind of weird to say this, but one of the cool things they are doing is they're using the reCAPTCHA technology to help decode Street View addresses.
Okay,
so I don't know what that reCAPTCHA means. The reCAPTCHA is, you know, when, like, you make a comment and it'll say, type in these numbers and letter combinations to make sure you're a real human being.
Right.
So that's what that is. And what Google does is they'll show you a picture where they're like, we think there's some numbers and letters here. Tell us what they are. Plus verify that you're a real human being, and then we'll know what the address is.
Yeah, you know, Google actually pioneered that idea with their books, because they were trying to, you know, they had taken pictures of every page of massive collections of books, and they were trying to digitize them, and they had some cool algorithm that could go through and read the books. But depending on the quality of the page, quality of the picture, there were some images that they still couldn't turn into, a digital copy of it. They couldn't turn it into letters and numbers. And so what they did was they would have one known phrase
right.
in their caption, and then the other one would be the image of the book and what they from the book, the word that they wanted to decipher. And so you would type in
that's
known
exactly
one,
it.
And that would verify that, yes, you're a real person and you're actually trying. And then they would have the next one was you were typing it in, and they would have, like, you know, they would have however many people they had do it until they had some sort of a statistical confidence that what everybody had typed in was the real what it actually was, and then they would put that into their database. So that's cool that they're doing that with addresses. Very nice. I like it.
Yeah, that's very cool. So that's what they're doing.
Nice.
Just kind of, that's a brilliant, you know, one of those, like, ah, that was smart.
You know, I mean, we do a lot of Google bashing sometimes, but, you know, they've got some awesome technology. That's, you know, I hope in all of our criticisms, the fact that they have some awesome stuff doesn't get lost. Because they really do. I mean, they, you know, there's a reason why they're as good as they are. It wasn't a mistake. Wow. But, that's
yeah,
cool.
No, totally true. Totally true. Unfortunately, though, that cannot be said about all companies.
Yes.
It's time for Matthew's favorite hour. $4.2 billion in revenue is how much RIM made last quarter.
That sounds like a lot.
It is a lot. Unfortunately, they managed to lose $125 million in the process.
Jeez Louise.
The revenue itself is down 19% from the previous quarter.
Oh, my gosh. That's unbelievable.
And I believe they actually made money the previous quarter, so you can't really talk about the percentage because it's a negative or it's weird. But
they, you know,
not good.
Not good at all. That's terrible. That really is terrible. I mean, you know, now when you're looking at those numbers, it's obvious. I mean, I think it was obvious that they were going to have a change of management. You know, well, we were calling it as early as last December.
I am still saying that RIM will not exist as an independent company by the end of the year.
You know, it's funny. So this seems like a good time to bring up the next article I was going to bring up, because they started talking on Friday that clearly BlackBerry right now is trying to figure out what they're going to do. And one of the really big options on the table is, selling themselves to somebody else. And it sounds like if anybody's going to take the bait, it's going to be Microsoft.
They're always good for it.
Yeah, they really are. Well, we were talking about that last year, that it made sense for Microsoft to team up with RIM. It's, obviously Microsoft's coming out with their own device, but in their own platform, but for a very long time, RIM and Microsoft were real happy bedfellows. A 19% decrease in revenue. They had a one in that's crazy. I mean, could you imagine that, like, in your own personal life, if you had a 19% decrease in how much money you made last year compared to this year?
That would hurt.
Yeah.
No, they're it's not great. But hey, that's we're seeing a whole bunch of top leaders leave, and this is he's still doing the house cleaning, and so we'll see by the end of the year,
Well, the
what's
question
actually
is
accomplished.
yeah, the question to me, I don't think you can blame current management at all for this. But the question really is, how do you change the momentum? What do you do, especially in the sight of the fact that Apple and Google are just, oh man, they are, in those numbers where, we make, I make a big deal out of the fact that Google only grew 48% instead of 58%, and the real loser in that wasn't Google, it was RIM. RIM has just shrunk unbelievably. And I guess they were talking about the fact that they've just completely given up on the consumer market. They're only trying to sell to the corporate market right now. And just trying to hold on to the government and corporate deals that they have. They're basically in a tailspin, just trying not to collapse. In a market where people are, consumers are buying an iPhone and supplementing that their, mobile device experience, like, our mom carries around a BlackBerry and an iPhone because she wanted an iPhone and her business gave her a BlackBerry. And so she has two phones, and that's not an isolated event. That's really becoming very common, whether people bring in their Androids or their iPhones into the market, or into the workplace. But tons of people are doing it. And man, I've it's coming to a. I think the curtains are getting ready to close, and it sounds like it's going to either be Nokia or Microsoft, and whichever one it does, obviously they're already very tight, so it'll benefit, whichever one takes it and takes RAM. And I think into a large degree, it's going to be, they're going to be arming themselves for the intellectual property wars that are going on, as they try to get into that market, have something to trade with. That's, if Apple were to buy RIM, which they won't, but if they were, that'd be the only reason why they would do it, is for the patent. And it's not a terrible reason to do it, really and truly. Google wouldn't be in a bad position to do that either. Give them something to negotiate with, to fight with. But
Maybe.
Could you imagine if BlackBerry? I mean, I think BlackBerry's gonna have to go into palm mode, where they're just a shell of what they once were, and until they're just so affordable that, you can't just let them die. Yeah, you have to. Somebody's gonna buy them, but I really do think you're gonna watch what happened to Palm, happened to RAM. I don't think they're gonna get a big buyout in the next year. I'm not. I don't. You know. I, you know. They might get bought out in the next year, but it's not going to be a big. It's not going to be a big purchase. They have a lot of falling to do before they get into a price point that I think Microsoft or Google want to jump on. And I don't think they're. You know. I might be the only reason why they stay around for a lot longer is because they still have a lot of room to fall. As awful as it sounds.
Yeah.
But
Totally. So last week you guys talked about Bluetooth and you know how Apple wants you to go in that direction. And Gadget had a very cool profile of a thing called Dice Plus, which is digital chance cubes rolling out at E3. When is E3? I don't even know. I should probably look that up.
Yeah, man, we gotta get our correspondent all ready to go.
Yeah. But anyways, but what they are, it's dice with little LED displays on them that you roll like you would a normal dice, but it's connected to Bluetooth, and so it will report to your iPad.
Whoa.
What the results are, and as well, not your iPad, with iOS, Android, Symbian, Linux, Windows. So it could be all of those. And they'll have more details in E3, but the possibilities are pretty interesting.
This is a cool idea.
D&D could never be the same again.
Right. Well, I mean, this is just me personally, but I've always thought the whole rolling the dice on a computer screen seems stupid, especially knowing how the random number algorithms are generated. It's always bothered me. I've never really trusted it. I just feel like I'm being cheated. Whereas if I could actually roll the dice and have it just know, that would be pretty cool. I would be pretty. Obviously it depends on how much the dice cost, but
$30 to $40.
Oh man, that's probably out of my price range.
they also have anti-cheat roll detection built in.
Interesting. those are going to be sophisticated little chipsets, because I mean, it has to have a Bluetooth. It probably has to have some sort of an accelerometer or gyroscope in it.
Yeah. Probably.
You know, it's probably just an accelerometer. But still, I mean, and it's all going to fit in the packet, and it has LEDs and a battery. It all has to fit in the package of a die. Man, that's pretty impressive. I'm impressed by that. That's a cool piece of technology. And if I were richer, I'd probably get it. But that
Well, you'll like, and this will really do it. Their final statement, because they need to learn more about it in E3, is, in the meantime, we'll be dreaming of Dungeons, Dragons, a digital D20, and Microsoft Surface.
Ooh, hey, that's kind of cool. You know.
That would be fun.
I can't think about the Microsoft Surface without thinking about the mock parody video. Yeah, the parody video. So you can send postcards on your big... Okay. I know what I'm going to watch after this show is done.
The comments are actually pretty kind of... They're funny. One of them's like, honestly, I think this is the worst invention I've seen all month. It would be cool to have, but I would always rather use traditional dice. This is silly. And then this one... has it really come down to where... Oh my gosh, I can read. Has it really come to the point where it has become hard work to glance at a dice and see what numbers are showing?
That's not the point. I like this one. I'm playing a game on a tablet. Why would I even want to think about rolling dice, much less roll ridiculous electronic dice? The game should handle all the random number generating for me. You know, maybe it's just the purity of like pure engineering to me. But you know, the physical universe is the only place where you can get truly random results. You know, and there's they have these like crazy chipsets that use all sorts of like quantum calculating to like
check. Oh, yeah.
If you want truly random numbers, And but you know, a die rolling is a pretty good way to get a random number. So it's sort of, you know, that's so funny. Man, I, you know, okay, I like it. It's a little expensive. If it were 20, if I could get a pair of dice for $20, I'd think about it.
Wow, all right.
You know.
It's definitely a geek toy for sure.
Yeah, it really is. You know,
Something
and you
you'd
know.
expect to see in like sharper image, honestly.
Yeah, that's very true. You know, and if I were getting, you know, I don't do D&D, but if I did, I could see how you might, you know, how you
Don't
could.
do D&D, but if I did.
You know, I could see how this would be something that, you know, you could play along with. I could see this being fun.
Meh,
You know,
meh, yeah.
it's a you know, but I think your description as it being in a something you'd expect to see in sharper image. Speaking of companies that have collapsed under the weight of the internet, you know, I think yeah, that's a good way to describe it. But so.
Yeah.
Cool.
But anyways, yeah, just fun. I saw that. I was like, that's cool.
So, I wanted to recap really quickly the day's events because for those of you who are still rolling in the 400s or whatever, was it 400 or was it 1400? When did they change
What are you
April
talking
from
about?
being? Well, I was going to make some historical reference to the fact that April Fool's Day was because April 1st used to be the beginning of the calendar year, and it wasn't until they switched it over and it was actually it was early. I can't remember if it was 400 or 1400, but it was like, but the whole problem was is like it had to do with like the Christian calendar versus the Roman calendar. And eventually the Pope went over to the Roman calendar, which is where they got the, you know, where we started in January. But in order to like mock people to try to get them to change, that's where April Fool's comes from, is the people who celebrate April 1st as the beginning of the year were the April Fools. Anyway, so this long
Got
history
it.
lesson to get to, I was like,
Hilarious.
I know, so funny. This is not, this is a comedy show, clearly. anyways, so
April Fools.
yeah. So it's sort of become an annual thing that you know, internet companies release their silly new products for the year that they're not actually going to make. And I find oftentimes companies will come up with things that I go, "Oh, I totally want that." And then you realize it's a joke and it's kind of upsetting. this year definitely had one, but I'll go through them. So, CatBlock Plus, as we talked about earlier in the show, AdBlock replaced all the ads with cats.
Which is pretty funny, I'll be
It
honest.
is pretty funny. So along, yeah, I think that one they'll keep that one around for a little while. But they other sites, Reddit, had a they have a time machine on it where you can look into the past, but you can also look into the future of what'll be on the front page, which is pretty clever. I went back to 2000, and the top page for those Lost fans out there, the top link was, "So what do you think about the hatch?" and it was like an entire article of old Lost jokes that were you know, that were common on like Dig and Reddit back when Lost was a big deal. I thought was, that made me laugh pretty good.
That's pretty funny.
XKCD, they got crazy. You know, he's like a super genius, the guy who writes the script. And so he like created this. He wrote like 20 different comic strips, and then wrote this crazy algorithm that, depending on your location, your screen resolution, your window size, what site you were being linked through, it would give you a different comic strip. And so it like, I don't even know how people realize that you could get different strips based on different scenarios, but it became this huge thing of people realizing, oh my gosh, there are tons of different strips that you can get, and he's got some crazy algorithm. So they worked out the algorithm and they tried to figure everything out, which just not, you know, very quite nerdy version of your April Fool's jokes. I didn't think it was
Yeah.
particularly funny, but it was really clever and people really got into it. But my favorite of all the April Fools, and I'm almost disappointed because I hope that this one would actually take place. Did you watch the video for the 8-bit Google Maps?
No, I did not.
Oh my gosh. I highly recommend everybody go to the website and see it's youtube.com/Google Maps is the link, but we'll have it on our website, and we'll also have our link to the 8-bit Google Maps. Basically what it is it's like an old so like the premise of the video is I'm gonna laugh just trying to get through it. They're like, Google Maps, we have it, it's used on laptops, it's used on mobile phones, on mobile tablets. We've got it on all these different platforms, but we have been ignoring for a long time one of the most popular platforms ever created, and it's about time we take care of that. So we've developed an 8-bit Google Maps for Super Nintendo. And so
Nice.
they have this video of it's like they talk about how they designed this specialty cartridge that will plug into like it'll like plug into a dial-up so you can download and you can connect to the Google Maps
Sweet.
servers, and they have a it's really really funny. I highly recommend you go and watch it. I don't want to give too
I'll
much
have to
away.
watch that.
Oh, it's
That's cool.
hilarious. But the but one of the so they didn't just make this video, they actually like decided to also sit down and make an 8-bit Google Maps, and you can go to it. It's like maps.google.com/8-bit, I think. We'll have a link for that as well. But it looks like an old super like Zelda style map where there's like paths and
Right. That
everything's
makes sense.
squares, and yeah, and it's like trees and stuff and the mountains and but they I guess it's all rendered real time. They didn't create a new map. They just took the map that they had and then they wrote some algorithm that would decide, where the path should go, where the trees and mountains would be, where water is, based on what's actually on Google Maps. And so you can still look up your address, you can still find routes and stuff. It doesn't work very well because it's all designed in 8-bit world. But one of the things that I thought was really cool is that you have your little adventurer is what you drag around the map. But what they did was they still have Google Street View working. So what you do is you drag your little adventurer down to wherever you want to look, and they re-render all of their Google Street View images so that it's all 8-bit colors. Which is so it's super ugly, but it looks like something that could be hypothetically could be rendered on an old, 16-bit system, or 8-bit system. It really
Yeah, that's funny.
it's really clever. I thought it was hilarious. So I've been really enjoying playing around with it and showing it off to people. But I highly recommend you go and check it out.
Yeah,
And
I will do that.
definitely. Yeah, that was that were all those are all the big April Fools that I saw this year.
Sweet. That's cool, man. That is cool. Well, while I was away, I discovered a couple new cool apps for my phone.
Yeah.
I started playing Tiny Tower,
What
which
is it?
is a it's a game that Zynga tried to copy a while ago and got made fun of for doing it. You make a tower and you fill it with floors and people and you collect money.
It's kind of like SimTower. Back
Yeah,
in the day.
actually, very similar to it indeed. Just
Nice.
mega simplified. So that's pretty fun. The other one is a paper camera, which is a camera that has a filter on top of it that like here, let me tell you what the different ones are. Like one of them is it looks like a comic book kind of,
Yeah.
which is really cool. then the one that's like just a sketch, and then it has an Aquilario. I don't know what that means. One that's an old like dot matrix printer, a neon cola, so it turns everything into like neon signs, which is really awesome actually. And then one that's contours, a bleaching effect one, and then like a Gotham noir, so it's like a black and white Gotham feel.
Nice.
A half ton tone. I don't know what that is. And then they have like a granny's paper, so it's like looks like old school paper that's been you know, like sepia almost.
Yeah.
And then like a pastel one. But it's a pretty fun little app for creating different filters. Pretty goofy. Pretty goofy. And also, I downloaded my very first ebook today.
Oh yeah. Which one?
Because it was on sale for $2, and it's normally $10. And I ended up doing Kindle.
Really? Interesting. Do you care to share why you made the decision?
Well, it was for $2 instead of $10. Oh. And everywhere else was $10. And Kindle actually did recently update their app to make it more iBooks-like.
Yeah.
And so it actually has, like, the page flippy action. It's got the dictionary. It does the bookshelf type of thing. It's a much better app than it was 2 weeks ago.
Right.
So I was like, yeah, what the heck? Plus, since I literally only have an iPhone, I can read it on my computer if I wanted to, and it would still be compatible on any other device I get. Which is a part I didn't like about iBooks is I would only have the option of reading it on my phone.
Right.
And I didn't like that, to be honest. I wanted to be able to take it other places. So
yeah, I've been a really big fan of and actually have actually used Google Books for that very reason.
Well, that and I have a bunch of Amazon credits right now. And so, you know, that's another reason.
It's a good one.
So, yeah. How about you, man? Did you survive without me?
I did survive without you, believe it or not. I think I mentioned earlier I got Angry Birds in Space, which
yep.
is pretty awesome. I'm elated and irritated by it because I had an idea for a game that was similar. They not only did they beat me to it, but they did a pretty fantastic job. You know, obviously mine had some subtle differences that would make it even cooler, but I don't think there's much room for competition now. It's a pretty great game. They did a good job, so I'm enjoying that. And I've been I took another stab. I've started a new project. I want an alarm clock that will turn on and off a light for me, which I know. They sell them. I don't really care that they sell them. I want to make my own. So so I've been I've gotten a couple of the parts together, and I'm building myself a new alarm clock, and I'm using Arduinos and using solid state relays and using different LCD monitors and stuff like that. So I'll have a clock. It'll be programmable, and it'll keep accurate time, and it'll have a lamp attached to it that'll turn on. And hopefully, I want it to slowly dim on and turn on slowly and wake me up in the morning. But, you know, that's the goal. That's what I'm working on. So good times.
Good times indeed. Cool. Yeah. That sounds pretty neat, actually.
Yeah, cool. Definitely.
Well, good show, man.
This was fun. Thanks.
Glad to be back. And thank you, everyone else, for joining us. I am James Furlow, and my brother is Matthew Furlow, and we will talk next time.
Dude, I have so much more respect for what you do posting this show every week. I could see how if you get into a
Yeah.
role, I could see how if you like if you got into it and I got more accustomed to it, it wouldn't be as difficult. But it's still, it's not a, it's obviously, it's not just a click and you're done.